Well, good evening, everyone. It's good to see you tonight. I want us to look at some of the Psalms of David. And this has to do with part of our daily Bible reading the last week. And you're thinking, well, wait a minute, we didn't read any Psalms. And you're right, we didn't. So we've been reading through 1 Samuel. But it's during that period of time in David's life where likely he wrote a number of the Psalms. And so if we go to 1 Samuel, we're going to be starting off around chapter 21 as we kind of look at some of the storyline there, so to speak, and then we'll be bouncing into some of the Psalms. So just to get in mind where we are at, or maybe where David is at. You know, David was quite the hero when he slew Goliath. You know, Saul was quite impressed when David killed Goliath. But Saul's jealousy of David is something that was epic. It was something that was just great as time went on, because everyone knew David. They knew God was with him. And they danced and they sang songs such as, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And you know, that really bothered Saul. Because now at this point in time, in his kingship, he's not very confident. Well, he has no reason to be confident. His confidence he had earlier on was because God was on his side. Because he was living and doing things in such a way that would please God. Saul was a humble man when God anointed him king. But now some things are changing. And so Saul somehow thinks that if he can destroy David and take him away, that his problems will go away. But that wouldn't be the case at all. That wouldn't be what's right. And so as we come into a part of our reading this week, David is trying to stay away from Saul. They've had several interactions. David has already proven that if he wanted to kill Saul, he could have done so. But he's trying to avoid that. He's trying to stay away. And Saul's son, Jonathan, the best friend to David, you know, is trying to protect David in chapter 20. We just read about that. And so in chapter 21, we find that Saul is just obsessed with killing David. David now has no food, he has no weapons, he's a wanted man. He's well known, he can't hide very well because everyone knows who he is. And so word spreads around quickly and gets back to Saul just on where he's at. So David fled to Nob, where Ahimelech was the priest. But the big question is, can he trust the priest at Nob? Well, Ahimelech trembled when he saw David. In part, I'm sure he understood and knew that, well, he was between Saul and David. That was kind of the position he was in at that point. I'm thinking that's not a good place to be. And perhaps that's what Ahimelech saw too. 1 Samuel chapter 21. We're going to read a few verses here. Verse 1. David went to Nob to Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech trembled when he met him and asked, "Why are you alone? Why is no one with you?" And David answered Ahimelech the priest, "The king charged me with a certain matter and said to me, 'No one is to know anything about your mission and your instructions. As for my men, I have told them to meet me at a certain place.' Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread and whatever you can find." But the priest answered David, "I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there is some consecrated bread here, provided the men have kept themselves from women." So this was bread that was consecrated. It was replaced every week in the service. And so David replied, "Indeed, women have been kept from us as usual whenever I sit out. The men's bodies are holy, even on missions that are not holy. How much more so today? So the priest gave him the consecrated bread, since there was no bread there except the bread of the presence that had been removed from before the Lord and replaced by hot bread on the day it was taken away. Verse 7. Now one of Saul's servants was there that day, detained before the Lord. He was Doeg the Edomite, Saul's head shepherd. David asked Ahimelech, "Don't you have a spear or sword here? I haven't brought my sword or any other weapon, because the king's business was urgent." And the priest replied, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, is here. It is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you want it, take it. There is no sword here but that one." And David said, "There is none like it. Give it to me." So David has seen that sword before when he killed Goliath. He was big. It was about as big as him, is the way it sounds. David didn't even have his sword with him because he had to leave town, so to speak, so quickly. He was unprepared. And so David made up an excuse here for his presence in Nob, that he was there on king's business. Well, I guess it sort of was the king's business, running away from the king and trying to stay ahead of him. So David fled to King Achish of Gath. As this story kind of goes along, you know, what we're trying to get the picture of here is just how much pressure was being put on David. Saul, it seems, was never just real far behind. Even if David went some distance away, everyone knew who he was, and word would spread back to Saul every time on where he was at. Chapter 21, verse 10 now. That day David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said to him, "Isn't this David, the king of the land? Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And David took these words to heart, and he was very much afraid of King Achish in Gath. And so he pretended to be insane in their presence, and while he was in their midst, he acted like a wild man, making marks on the doors of the gate and letting saliva run down his beard. Achish said to his servants, "Look at the man. He is insane. Why bring him to me? Am I so short of madmen that you have to bring this fellow here to carry on like this in front of me? Must this man come into my house?" David realizes even in Gath there's no place to hide, and he's concerned about the king of Gath knowing who he is and knowing his reputation, because he knew well his reputation. They knew the song that was sung about Saul and about David. And so David was very much afraid of Achish at this point. And you try to picture this scene, David pretending that he is insane, you know, so that Achish will just leave him alone, maybe have pity on him in some way. And so the king was glad to let the madman go. But we have to remember as well that it was not David's doing alone for his getting away, or that of King Achish. But instead, David's deliverance was actually provided by the Lord. There'll be some more on that as we read on. So, it was somewhere during this time that David wrote some of the Psalms. Maybe some of the ones we are familiar with. I want to put a marker here, and let's go over to a couple of the Psalms. We are looking at Psalm 56. Psalm 56. You can understand, you can hear the distress, you can hear the despair in the voice of David in these words when you read the psalm. And so when David was feeling the pressure of King Saul, or now even others who may want his head, David turns to God, something that he always would do. He would turn to God. He called on the name of the Lord. And he owed his deliverance to the Lord. In the 56th Psalm, verse 1, "Be merciful to me, O God, for men hotly pursue me. All day long they press their attack. My slanderers pursue me all day long. They are attacking me in their pride. Whenever I am afraid, I will trust in you. In David, whose word I praise, in God I trust. Verse 4. In God, whose word I praise, in God I trust, I will not be afraid. What can mortal man do to me? All day long they twist my words. They are plotting, always plotting to harm me. They conspire, they lurk, they watch my steps, eager to take my life. On no account let them escape. In your anger, O God, bring down the nations. Record my lament. List my tears on your scroll. Are they not in your record? Then my enemies will turn back when I call for help. By this I will know that God is for me. In God, whose word I praise, in the Lord, whose word I praise, in God I trust, I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? I am under vows to you, O God. I will present my thank offerings to you. For you have delivered me from death and my feet from stumbling, that I may walk before the Lord in the light of light. That's a little bit of a long reading, but I couldn't figure out any verses to leave out of that. They all flow one to another. And it helps us to see and understand David's disposition before God. That when he is feeling the pressure of the enemies, those who are against him, breathing down his neck, quite literally, he turns to God. And he recognizes that if there is hope for deliverance, it's not going to come by his own efforts. It's not going to be the efforts of anyone else. It's going to be by the efforts of God. It's God who he says, you will deliver me. So we understand kind of the mind of David and where he's at right now and what's going through his mind. I'm not sure that I can fully understand and appreciate just how David feels. I've had some people along the way that didn't like me. And I think some even who tried to make things difficult for me. But never anything like what David is facing. I mean, David is feeling that his enemies could kill him at any time. David soon is going to be hiding from cave to cave to cave and trying to make his whereabouts unknown from Saul, from Saul's soldiers and army, and from others that he thought could harm him. Let's look at the 34th Psalm. Psalm 34. Some have said that this is when David wrote this, when he was before King Achish, when he pretended the insanity. Verse 1. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Verse 19. A righteous man may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from all. You have to appreciate David's view and feelings of about Jehovah God, that his hope, his salvation, is all in the hands of God. And as his enemies were mounting up around him, his dependence on God continues to grow. Some lessons learned for us. That when we find difficulties in life and we have some who work against us, when Satan is doing everything he can to whittle away at our faith, we are reminded that when we call on God, when we lean on him, he is the one who offers deliverance. That's where we find our help. And when life gets the hardest, when we feel beaten down, when we feel like we can hardly go on, we have nothing on David. He knows and he understood what it was to be fearing for his life, and always he turned to God. Let's get a picture in our mind again of just where we are in this Bible story. In the lower part of the map, you can see Gath, where David had gone. He had fled over this area here. During this period of time in chapter 22, remember he had his parents following him too. They knew that we could not continue with them. And so he took his parents over here to Moab and found a place for them there. And then he went back to Judah. But in time, he's going to wind up here in Adullam, in the caves in and around Adullam, in that hill country, part of the Judean wilderness, really, of Israel. And there's a mention here of the forest of Herith in that same area, where he left the cave of Adullam. He went a little bit south to this area that was called the forest of Herith. And so that becomes a part of our story pretty quick here as we go forward. So David left Gath. He went to Adullam. We're going back to our text. Back to 1 Samuel, chapter 22 this time. If you'll go with me, 1 Samuel, chapter 22. We start with the first and second verse. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard it, they went down to him there. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their leader, and about 400 men were with him. So now we can see and we can envision that David's not alone. But it doesn't seem as though he's really gained a lot of soldiers or a lot of the elite of the day. But he has gathered there with him many of the discontent, those who have their own troubles in life. As if David is not carrying enough burdens of his own now, the burdens of others are kind of thrust upon him too. David is one who always seems to rise to the top with regard to leadership. And here is a group of 400 that seemingly needs help and needs a leader. David becomes that leader. Verse 3. From there David went to Mizpah in Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, "Would you let my father and mother come and stay with you until I learn what God will do for me?" And so he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him as long as David was in the stronghold. You know, a cave was not a good place for his parents. I can't imagine it was a good place for any of them. But it was a place of hiding. David, you might recall, is a great-grandson to Ruth of the Moabites. So he has some roots back there in Moab. He would have kinfolk that's over on that side. So the prophet Gad told him to leave Moab and to go to Judah. Verse 5, the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not stay in the stronghold. Go to the land of Judah." So David left and went to the forest of Herith. That's what we looked at a moment ago on the map. So we have some idea on where David is going here back and forth. Well, let's go to the Psalms again. This time we're going to the 142nd Psalm. Psalm 142. So this might have been written in the time when David was in that cave of Adullam. Most attribute it to that period of time when he was in the cave. It's something that's presented as a cry to the Lord or as a prayer to the Lord. Psalm 142. I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out my complaint before him before I tell my trouble. When my spirit grows faint within me, it is you who know my way. In the path where I walk, men have hidden a snare for me. I look to my right and see no one is concerned for me. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. Let's just stop there for a minute. You can hear even the despair in the voice of David when he realizes, who can he trust? Who is there around him that really has his back, so to speak? He turns to the Lord because deliverance can be found in the Lord. He cannot depend on anybody else. And so there is comfort to be found when he turns to the Lord. The reality, again, just being that he knows that there's no one around him who understands really what he's going through. There are those who have hidden a snare, that they've set traps, they've tried to find him, and the effort is there to kill him. My spirit grows faint within me. Well, I guess so. If we'd been on the road for weeks just trying to stay ahead of our enemy, and knowing how close the enemy has come at times to taking us down, well, we might be concerned, we might be scared, there might be despair on our part, our spirit might grow faint. When you feel like there is no refuge, when you feel like no one is on your side, it could be scary. But David knew someone was on his side. It was the Lord. Verse 5, I cry to you, O Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Listen to my cry, for I am in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they are too strong for me. Set me free from my prison, then I may praise your name. Then the righteous will gather about me because of your goodness to me. David feels like he's in prison. Though he's on the run, he feels like he's in prison because everyone is against him. But he knows that the Lord is on his side. David did have a friend. He had a true friend. That was the son of Saul, Jonathan, who was his true friend. Back in our text, in 1 Samuel chapter 23, in 1 Samuel chapter 23, let's see, around verse 15. Here's David's true friend. While David was at Horish in the desert of Ziph, he learned that Saul had come out to take his life. And Saul's son, Jonathan, went to David at Horish and helped him find strength in the Lord. Let's stop right there for a second. When we are wondering if we have a true friend, if you're thinking about and wondering what is the definition of a true friend, I'm going to say right here. Someone who helps us find strength in the Lord. We could have other friends. We could have many friends, maybe that are kind to us in some ways, but sometimes friends let us down because they are not what they pretend to be. And if we have a friend that is not helping us to draw closer to God, that's not a friend we want to hold real close because they're not going to help our faith. David's friend, Jonathan, was a true friend because he helped David to find strength in God. In verse 17, he said, "Don't be afraid," he said. "My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father Saul knows this." The two of them made a covenant before the Lord. Then Jonathan went home, and David remained at Horish. A true friend. A truer friend David could not have. So, there are other enemies of David, or those who are trying to be on the good side of Saul. The Ziphites, they go to Saul at Gibeah, and they tell him where David's hiding. This is what we were saying before. It seems like David could go nowhere where there were not those who knew who he was, and word got back to David every time. So he's hiding in the strongholds around Horish. I'm thinking that that could be from city to city or certainly in the caves in that area. And so in that time, the southern part of Judea was not, you know, greatly inhabited. It was a rather barren area. In fact, even today, it's still a rather barren area. And the Ziphites are trying to hand David over to Saul. I'm sure they think that if they could do that, that there'd be something in it for them. And Saul would take care of them, you know, because this would be a prized win if Saul could find David. And so this is the desert of Maon. Through this region here, the southern part of the Judean wilderness. And so this is where David's running. This is where he's trying to hide. Even at times, he's on one side of the mountain, Saul is on the other side of the mountain, if you can imagine that, and the pressure that that would be. Like, Saul is about to catch up to him, you know, and is about to have, you know, his way, you know, with him. In our text in 1 Samuel 23, and let's see, let's begin reading around verse 19. The Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah and said, "Is not David hiding among us in the strongholds of Horish, on the hill of Hilkiah, south of Jeshimon? Oh, now, O king, come down whenever it pleases you to do so, and we will be responsible for handing him over to the king." And Saul replied, "The Lord bless you for your concern for me. Go and make further preparation. Find out where David usually goes and who has seen him there. They tell me he is very crafty. Find out about all the hiding places he uses and come back to me with definite information. Then I will go with you, and if he is in the area, I will track him down among all the clans of Judah." Verse 24. So they set out and went to Ziph ahead of Saul. Now David and his men were in the desert of Maon, in the Arabah south of Jeshimon. Saul and his men began to search, and when David was told about it, he went down to the rock and stayed in the desert of Maon. When Saul heard this, he went into the desert of Maon in pursuit of David. Well, let's stop right there for a minute and go back to the Psalms again. This time to the 54th Psalm. So Saul is getting close. David is feeling the pressure. He knows his enemy has made preparation. His enemy has many on his side. David's every step is tracked. In the 54th Psalm, "Save me, O God, by your name. Vindicate me by your might. Hear my prayer, O God. Listen to the words of my mouth. Strangers are attacking me. Ruthless men seek my life. Men without regard for God. Surely God is my help. The Lord is the one who sustains me. Let evil recoil on those who slander me. In your faithfulness, destroy them. I will sacrifice a freewill offering to you. I will praise your name, O God, for it is good. For he has delivered me from all my troubles, and my eyes have looked in triumph on my foes." So David is both crying out to Jehovah God for help, for protection, to look after him. And at the same time, as he has done already in some of the other Psalms, he gives thanksgiving for the deliverance that God has given him in times past. "You have delivered me from all of my troubles." And so there is that element of thanksgiving that is there. And so Saul is in hot pursuit. He's closing in. He's just on the other side of the mountain. But Saul is forced to break away because word comes to him that the Philistines have come into the land and are raiding the land. Coincidence? I don't think so. God's providence, sparing David's life once again, when David might have thought that it was over, that there was not much hope that was left for him, Saul retreats and he goes the other way. So David left from there and looked for another place to find some shelter. And he went to the strongholds of En-Gedi. And so if you look at the map, you can see about halfway down the Dead Sea, right on the shoreline, is a place that was called Gedi. The En-Gedi just references the spring. In Hebrew, En means spring. So it's spring of Gedi. That's where he went. It's an interesting place there even today, because that part of Israel is, again, rather barren. It's a part of the Judean wilderness. It's mostly just sand and rock, and there's not a lot that grows. There's not much that grows along the Dead Sea because, well, it's the Dead Sea, and it cannot sustain life. But there are springs there at En Gedi that even if you can see, the picture's not that great, but you can see right in here that there are trees that are growing here along this ravine and in that area there. Here's where David went. This is when he was seeking refuge. There's a lot of caves in that area. In more modern time, more modern as in the second century, Josephus, a historian, wrote about En Gedi and spoke about the palm trees and the balsam that was there. Balsam was used for making perfume, very nice and expensive perfume. And the springs here provided a climate that was favorable all year round. And so in this desert, here was an area where things would grow and where agriculture could be found. And so this is the picture you're seeing is a modern day plantation that's there in En Gedi, date and palm trees that are there. But if you look not too far, you can walk right up in these ravines. And you can go up into the springs that come out of the mountain. There's a stream that comes down through. There's a number of waterfalls, as you can imagine it, as it's coming. You can see the trees as it comes up through here. So you know there's some water up in here somewhere, and there's actually a path right there where you can walk along this spot. When we were there, we walked up there a ways. I would have liked to just kept on going, but we could only go so far. There's only a little bit of time. But what you can see as you go up in there is these waterfalls and pools of water, you know, such as this. David was here. Long ago, this is where he sought refuge. This is where he went into hiding. This is where he could find food, he could find water, and he could find caves there as well, because all through that area and through that region, there were caves where he could hide, and the 400 that were with him, where they could hide. And so maybe it was about this time, if we look at one more psalm, the 57th psalm. The 57th psalm, when Saul fled from, or when David fled from Saul to the caves. Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me, for in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until disaster has passed. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills His promise for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends His love and His faithfulness. I am in the midst of lions. I lie among ravenous beasts. Men whose teeth are spears and arrows and whose tongues are sharp words. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in distress. They dug a pit in my path, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. David's heart was fixed on God. As the enemies had come near and David would escape from one place to another, he knew that deliverance came from God. He knew how ferocious his enemies were. He calls them, likens them to lions. And he says, I've lived among these ravenous beasts whose teeth are like spears and arrows. It's a poetic description, really, of just how scary the situation was and how brutal his enemies were. They wanted to deliver him to Saul, dead or alive. David continued just to turn to the Lord, because that was where true deliverance was found, is by turning to the Lord. There's some truths we can pull out of this today, an application that we can make too. That there are enemies around us. Satan is described as a roaring lion in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. And he is set on destroying us. He is not trying to just harm us. He's not trying to just scare us. That's not what Peter said. But that he is like a roaring lion, that he is trying to destroy us, to kill us. That's what Satan is doing. And so while we may not have a physical enemy that's chasing us with spears and arrows and trying to take us to a wicked king, we can understand the significance of having an enemy that's working against us. Our enemy is Satan. But we can be delivered from that enemy. Our deliverer is the Lord, the Son of God. He is our deliverer who takes us, who holds us up, who takes us away from the one who can cause destruction. He is the one who provides us protection. David was turning to the Lord and looking to the Lord for the help he needed. We have to do the same thing. So maybe we're not hiding in caves in the mountains. We're not having to flee a physical enemy. But the battle is all the same. The battle is just as treacherous. Satan wants to destroy us. How are we going to respond? Our deliverer has done everything he can to spare us, to save us. And in him we have redemption, forgiveness of sins. As this day comes to a close and our week begins again, things are going to get busy because they always do. Everyone is busy with work and school and things that have to be done. And sometimes so busy that it causes us to take our eyes off of what's more important, our service in the kingdom, our service to God. And may a lesson like this help us to get refocused and to know that we're not the first one that faces difficulties in life and challenges. Many have done it before and have been delivered. We can be too. Do you need to respond to the Lord? Would you come as we stand and sing?